Right. Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Erev, Daf Kuf Aleph 101. Just a couple more days to go until we finish the Masechta and begin Pesachim on Shabbos. Okay. The Torah says regarding Pesach, Mimach Rasa Shabbos, the day after Shabbos. The Torah refers to Pesach as Shabbos, so Shabbos is where we're going to be beginning Pesach. Makes perfect sense. In the meantime, however, we have a little bit more of Erevin to cover, a little bit more of the 10th parak of Erevin to cover. Today's topic of discussion is going to be primarily, well, half of today's discussion is going to be SES, OL, the formation of a tent on Shabbos, OL Arai. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. And then more Gzera Derabbanans, possible Gzera Derabbanans, transferring from a Rishos Rabban to Rishos Yachid. That'll be the second half of today's daf. In the meantime, however, just to wrap up yesterday's daf, three more curses. Okay, I told you, not the best way to start a daf, but we have to give three more curses to women. Why do I have to give three more curses to women? Because yesterday the Gemara promised us 10 curses to Chava as a result of her involvement in the Chet HaRishon, the Chet HaKadmon, the original sin. So as a result of that, Chava was punished with 10 different punishments. We quoted yesterday, Avos to Rabbi Nassan. First parak of Avos to Rabbi Nassan, where it goes through 10, but then in the list it only gave us 7. So what we need to do is we need to come up with another 3 in order to get to the number 10. If you remember yesterday, let's just start again from the Esther Klalos. Let's just quickly review what are those 10 Klalos. Why are we doing this now? Meaning, what does this have to do with Erevin, the 10th parak of Erevin? So quite frankly, nothing. Meaning yesterday we had a discussion in the Gemara about roots and trees and branches, and we talked about once the root goes above 3 tefachim, there's a separation of more than 3 tefachim from the root in the ground, so now the root has the status of a tree, and just like there's a gzera derabbanan that you're not allowed to use a tree on Shabbos, neither you're allowed to use a root once the root is above ground by 3 tefachim. There was a machlokas yesterday on Marayim, but in the meantime, however, that's what the main discussion of yesterday's daf was, but we quoted Rami Bar Abba in the name of Rav Asi, who made a statement regarding walking on grass. So then the Gemara quoted him again regarding this, regarding a little bit of Agadata vis-a-vis women. And the discussion really started with the prohibition of a husband forcing his wife towards intimacy, right? And then the Gemara just moved on to the discussion of the appropriateness of proprietary, how proper it should be, whether a woman should proposition her husband, should not proposition her husband. So that's what we got onto yesterday. In the meantime, however, I'm in the Gemara, just wrapping up from yesterday's daf. It's let's say 15 lines from the bottom of the Amud. So the pasuk says Elisha share harbe elu shnei tipei damim achas dam nidav achas dam besilim. So first of all, clause 1 and 2 of the woman is that she's going to bleed, and she's going to bleed both through dam nida and through dam besulim. It's bonech zetsar gidobanim. She's going to raise children, right? Not easy. That's number 3. Veheronech zetsar ha'ibor. She's going to have to be pregnant for 9 months. Also. Not easy. I speak, of course, of no experience whatsoever and any of these. So the Tsar Ha'ibor, so that's also, that's number 4. Ba'at Seif Tel Dibanin Kamash Ma'o. She's got to actually deliver the child. Okay. So that's number 5. The Eli Shei Tishukatech Malam Shaisha Mishtokekas Abala Bishai Yoshiyot Tel Aderech. Husband's going to travel often, and the wife is going to long for the husband as he's going away. So that's now number 6. V'huyim Shalbach Malam Shaisha Tavas Balei Va'ish Tovah Bepeh. And the husband propositions his wife, but his wife does not proposition a husband. Okay, so that's number 7. So the Gemara says, good, so those are the 7 curses of Chava as a result of the Chet HaRishon. So the Gemara now is bothered because it says very clearly over here that the wife should not proposition the husband. In the meantime, however, you remember what we learned yesterday. Leah propositioned Yaakov, and as a result of that, out came tremendous children. And that particular instance came out Yisachar, and as the Gemara notes, Yisachar had extraordinary bina. He had unbelievable insight, and the Gemara attributes that to the fact that Leah propositioned Yaakov. So we're kind of at a standstill. We already asked this question yesterday, and the Gemara answers Ki kamrin demaratz aritzui kamei. So the Gemara says that okay, that was garitzui. In other words, the wife. You're right. The wife cannot proposition the husband, but the wife can certainly communicate to the husband that she's interested without actually initiating the proposal. And here's what the Gemara is. The Gemara now, so that was a total of seven. Seven, and we need ten. Well, we don't need ten. But in other words, the introduction was, here are ten klalos. And so far, we've only arrived at seven. Kiyas, Rav Dimi, Amra, Tufa, Ke'evo. So Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael and he supplements. He says, here are the other three. Atufa ke'evel, she's wrapped up like a mourner. Meaning that in modesty, she is to be covered. Rashi says this is a reference to her hair. Her hair needs to be covered. So that's now curse number, what are we up to? Eight. Okay, good. So atufa ke'evel, menuda mikol adam. And she is in nidui, she's excommunicated. So the meaning, and the Gemara is going to point out, Rashi points out over here, meaning that once she's married, that's it. She's stuck with her husband. She can't marry another guy. That's not true by men. Men can marry a woman, and then can marry another woman as well. Okay, not recommended, but, you know, they can do it. Nowadays, it's not only not recommended, nowadays it's prohibited through Rabbeinu Gershom. I think we're all familiar. Chavusha beveis ha'asurim. And she's a prisoner. So the meaning that, as Rashi points out over here, Rashi explains, called Kvoda Basmelch Panima, woman is at home, primarily. And so therefore, that's going to be klala number 10. Okay, so those are your klala's numbers, 8, 9, and 10. So my menuda mikol adam ilem mishim da'asir le'yichod. So again, I already gave away the answer, but the Gemara is asking the question, what does that mean, menuda mikol adam? She's excommunicated from anyone. So it's not talking about the Easter of Yichud, the Gemara points out, because yonami asir le'yichod. Yichud is a prohibition for both men and women. Ela de'asir le'beitrei. Okay, so the Gemara gives away what we already said, and that is that once she's married, that's it. She can only get one guy. A guy marries a girl, so guy can marry another girl as well. But Masisa Tana, now, okay, that is one version of what Klala's 8, 9, and 10 are. Okay, the Gemara is going to give us another possibility of what the last three Klala's are. Megadel Tzerke Lilis, she grows her hair like Lilis. Lilis, popular female demon of the Gemara, right? She comes up a number of times. Okay, no concept in terms of what she looks like, but apparently from the context of a Gemara, she had long hair. V'yoshevus ha'meshanenes mayim kebehema. According to this version, also in terms of how she urinates, that's also a klala. She urinates like an animal. V'nasis kar labala, and she becomes like a pillow to her husband. Now v'idach. Now the Gemara points out. Now these last three. How come Rav Dimi didn't record these last three? Meaning, Rav Dimi obviously didn't feel that these were curses. Rav Dimi obviously had his own grouping of what the last three were. Hani Sheva Chula, the Gemara says, it's just a question of perspective and how you look at something. Gemara says that when Rav Dimi looked at these three, these are not curses. This is in fact Shevach. So the Gemara points out that we learn things from the animals, from the animal population. So a prey to the mule is koras meshtenes mayim. So she squats and she urinates. And the ofa shamayim, in terms of the birds, yechak menu, we're going to get smart from them. How so? Tarnagol mefayis v'achakach boal. In other words, the tarnagol, first he basically warms up to his mate, and then afterwards he has bia. In other words, from those simple behaviors of animals, we should learn how to behave as well. So what you see over here is that these are not negative aspects. These are, in fact, highly regarded aspects. So in terms of how she urinates, so being that she urinates like an animal, that's not a negative thing. In fact, the Gemara says that's a positive thing. It's more private. It's okay. The Gemara feels it's positive. Okay, so Amar Rav Yochanan Malay Lo Nina Torah Hainu Lamedim Steals Mechatul VeGezel Min Amala. A Gemara I'd say is popular, but again, popular just simply means that I knew it beforehand. But I feel like most people know this Gemara. The Gemara says that had the Torah not been given, so just basic derech eretz, meaning proper conduct, we should have just looked at the animal kingdom, and we could have seen proper conduct. So next time, you know, you say to your kids, you know, don't eat like an animal. The kids are going to be, you know, the response should be, what do you mean? It's a good thing to eat like an animal. The Gemara says derech eretz, proper conduct actually is taught to us by the animal kingdom. The Gemara gives a couple of examples. Tznius michatul, like a modesty from a cat. Meaning, like we just spoke out. Meaning that when the cat goes to the bathroom, the cat does so privately, so two human beings when going to the bathroom should not do so in a public environment, but should do so privately. Rashi also adds to that as well, that they also cover their excrement. So again, just basic derech eretz. We should do the same as well. Gezel min namala, theft from an ant. Rashi explains this one as well. Rashi explains, what does that mean? How do ants not thieves? Dichsiv, Rashi says, it's the last two lines of the Rashi. Question of what the gear says in the pasuk. So tachin bekayitz lachma ve'ein achas gozels me'machal chaverta. They store their food, meaning that they know that the long winter is up ahead. And so what do? They take food and they store food. So in other words, they're not going to steal from anybody else. They're going to make sure that they have for themselves. So that is how we see that ants don't steal, and we should learn from ants. Arayos miyona. We learn how a husband and wife should be with one another. We learn that from the behavior, the conduct of a yona. Derech eretz mitarnagol. I'm sorry, Rashi explains this as well. Sheinaniskak el labazugo, meaning yonas of the doves, they are monogamous. They only have one mate. They choose one mate and they stay with one mate. They're faithful. They have fidelity. So the Gemara says that's derech eretz, basic proper conduct for us as well. And finally, derech eretz mitan negolshim efayis v'achakach bawal. And as far as the chicken is concerned, the rooster and the hen. So that we already described. The Gemara says is that first they cozy up to their mate and then they have bia. And so the Gemara says again, simple basic derech eretz between husband and wife. Now, what exactly? How is that conversation going between the Yona and his mate? So, Am Rav Yehuda, Am Rav Hachi Kamarla. This is what he says to her. Now, we're going to be translating bird talk. Okay, so we end off this discussion with a little bit of bird talk. So, Zvigna le Ziga Dematu lech Ad Karech. As Rashi explains, what he does is he basically spreads out his wings, and it's as if he's saying to her. Meaning, again, we're interpreting motions of the bird. So, but again, basic derech eretz. I'll buy you a coat that goes down to your legs. Labasa hachi amarla lishtametete lekavlasa dahu tarnagol iislei velos vinalach. If I had, I would have gotten for you. Meaning, whatever I own, whatever I possess, I'm going to purchase for you. So again, he warms up to her. He, even if he can't afford something for her, he'll say that he'll buy whatever he can for her. Again, simple derech eretz about how the husband should talk to his wife. Okay, Ad Khan, that takes us to the end of yesterday's daf. We now begin today's daf. I told you two basic discussions that we're going to be having today. One is Ohel, and the second is going to be, again, more possible Gzeira de Rabbanans, Rishus Yechav, Rishus Rabbin. But first things first, Ohel. Okay. One of the 39 malachas, just a quick introduction, then we're going to start with the Gemara. One of the 39 malachas on Shabbos is Bona. You know, to build on Shabbos, okay, which means that I can't build a house on Shabbos. Okay? I can't destroy, can't demolish a house on Shabbos as well. So is there. But that has to be so. So I'm not live notes, meaning I'm going to knock down the house so I could build it up better. Okay, but in other words, building is building a house. Like all Malacha Shabbos, in order to violate the Issur D'oraisa, it has to be a binyan keva. It has to be a permanent structure. Meaning playing with your little Lego on Shabbos is not bona, right? It's not building. You know it's not permanent. So by definition, it has to be a permanent structure. However, we also know that there are many gzeres de rabbanan, and one of them regarding binyan is that not only can you build a permanent structure, but even if it's an ol arai, even if it's a temporary tent, the rabbis prohibited that as well under certain circumstances. So basically, what the Mishnah and the Gemara are going to be discussing is what is going to be the extent of this issur de rabbanan of Asiyas Ohel, the creation of an Ohel. Again, Binyan D'Araisa, not even open up for a discussion, meaning what's there to discuss? You're not allowed to build a house. But what we're going to be discussing now is, to what degree did the rabbis prohibit Ohel Arai, even a temporary structure? Okay, let's just speak intuitive for just a second, and then we'll see the Mishnah and the Gemara inside. I close the door to my house. Is that Binyan? Let's just speak intuitively. Is that binyan? So, well, you could make the argument, well, in other words, there was an opening to the house, and now I close that opening. So, to a certain degree, you could answer yes, I'm securing the home. I'm putting more wool into the house. But you all know, I mean, we all intuitively understand that's not binyan, meaning the door is already part of the house. Built into the house is a door. So when I open and close the door, that's not binyan on any level. Right? I think intuitively that all speaks to us. But how about this? In other words, let me not make it so straightforward. Let's say it's not a door, but let's say it's like this, right? But in the good old days, windows, we talked about this in the end of Shabbos as well. Windows were not glass. Windows were just simply holes cut out into the wall of the house. And how do I close the window? I take a shutter and I put it up against the window. Is that binyan? Now again, binyan in a Torah means it has to be permanent. And if the shutter's coming in and out, you understand that that's not permanent. But there, it's not that there was a shutter actually connected to the window where I'm just opening and it's not moving on a hinge, it's not swinging on a hinge. If I pick up a beam and put it against the window, is that going to be considered binyan? On a derabbanan level, even on a rabbinic level, is that going to be prohibited? So, if you remember, we had that discussion back in Masechta Shabbos. We debated that issue. Rabbi Eliezer, I believe, was arguing with the Tanakhama, if I remember correctly. Good. So, you see where we're going with this discussion? Meaning, basically, what we're going to try to put into terms is, when is the door considered part and parcel of the house, and obviously not binyan, and when is the door going to be perhaps a violation of binyan, not on a daraisa level, but maybe on a derabbanan level? The Mishnah. Hadel sheba muksa. The doorway to the backyard. Muksa, don't get confused. I remember in my earlier years, right? Muksa, what does muksa have to do with anything over here? Muksa over here just simply means the backyard. Okay, muksa sometimes comes in the context, especially if we're learning Shabbos and Erevin, you know, the concept of muksa. But truth of the matter is, usually we don't use the word muksa to describe that. We usually use words like mulchan. But anyway, muksa over here just simply means backyard. Hadel sheba muksa, the doorway of the backyard, vechadakim sheba pirsa. Or let's say you have an opening in your fence, and you have thorns, which are kind of stuck together, matted together, and they're used in order to close the pirsa. Umachatzelos, and also the same thing with mats as well, ein no'alan bahen, ela imkein gvom min ha'aretz. Okay, you can't close it unless they are elevated from the ground. Okay. In other words, basically, you see that door over there? What is noteworthy about the door? It's never touching the ground. Because it's on hinges, and because it swings open, swings closed, so the door is never on the ground. So there the door is never considered a CSOHL, not on a Daraisa level, not on a Darabana level, because the door is always above ground. However, if that door over there wasn't above ground, but that door is huge, but I had to pick up the door and actually slide it over there, so our Mishnah says that's no good. That is a violation of Bona. And so therefore, you cannot do it. Now that's our Mishnah. So our Mishnah takes a very strong position, which is that in order for a door, or any shutter for that matter, to not be a violation of binyan, it has to be always elevated from the ground. Like that door right over there, like all of our doors. Okay. Uri minhu. The Gemara right away jumps on the Mishnah by quoting a braisa. Delas anigros, machalas delas anigros, vekankana nigra, bizman shikshurim vetluyin, noel and behem beshabbat, vein sarachlam rabbi yamtav. Okay. So if I have doors that are dragging on the ground, so here already you know what the problem is. Meaning our Mishnah gives us the impression that it has to be suspended in air. Always suspended in air. If it's not, it's going to be a problem. It'll be a violation of binyan. Meanwhile, the Braisa says, if it's dragging on the ground and you have mats, which are dragging, you have kankan. Rashi describes kankan as is part of the plowing mechanism. Okay, for our purposes, just all we need to know is that it's a beam that closes the door. So hanigrab is manshik shurim v'tulim, as long as they're tied and they are hanging, no alam bahem, meaning they have to be fastened to the door. Now, fastened to the door, not on hinges, meaning, but just simply need to be tied, connected to the door, so they're not going anywhere else. So then I could close it on Shabbos, and it goes without saying that if I can close it on Shabbos, I can for sure close it on Yontif. In general, more apt to be more lenient on Yontif. So if I'm allowed to do something on Shabbos, for sure I'm allowed to do it on Yontif as well. In the meantime, however, the problem is self-evident. Our Mishnah says it has to be hanging in air. The Braisa says, nah, it could be dragging on the ground and that would be fine. Amar Abaye b'sheish lemtzir. So Abaye says, I'll give you the distinction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Braisa is talking about a door that has hinges, meaning it looks like a door. Again, remember, and this really frames our whole discussion, we're not really talking about Binyamin HaTorah. Binyamin HaTorah means bricks, mortar. In other words, that's building. Here we're talking about Binyan Midrabanan. This is the formation of a tent on a rabbinic level. So as we're going to see through the rest of this discussion, if there are ways to, that are self-evident that this is not building, I'm just closing the door, so then it will not present the problem whatsoever. So what the Gemara now here is arguing is that since the door of the Braisa has hinges on it, hinges is an excellent indication that these are not bricks, this is just simply a door, I'm just closing the door. And so therefore, says Abaye, that's the Braisa. The Braisa is because it's talking about door with hinges, so therefore it doesn't have to be hanging in there, it could be simply dragging on the ground. I'll pick it up, I'll close the door with it, it's clear that it's a door. The Mishnah, says Abaye, is not talking about where there are hinges, and therefore it has to always be in a state of hanging in air. That's one approach to resolve the Mishnah and the Braisa. Rava Amar B'Shahai Lamtzir. Rava basically gives the same answer, but Rava is a little bit more lenient than Abaye. Rava says it doesn't even have to currently have hinges. As long as at one point historically this door had hinges, that's sufficient, that's enough. Okay. So you don't have a major debate over here between Abaye and Rava. In other words, the basic idea of the two are the same. Once there's evidence that it is or was a door, Abaye Rava, so then basically it doesn't have to be hanging in air. It can even be dragging on the ground. I'll pick it up, I'll close the door with it. That's fine. Meizveh the Gemara challenges, Dallas and Negros, Machasas and Negros, Vekankan and Negros, Vesmashik Shurim, Vetuling, Vohim in Aretz, Afilim Elonima, No Alam Behem, Vim Lav, Ein No Alam Behem. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. The problem, it's not clear, not totally clear, but Tosus points out, the problem with the Braisa is the Braisa itself is kind of confusing. The Braisa says it's dragging on the floor. That's how the Braisa opens up. And then the Braisa says, and it's suspended in air. Well, which one is it? So Abaye, Mitarz Latame, Rava, Mitarz Latame. So Abaye and Rava say, look, both of us will be fine with the Braisa. In that, Abaye, Mitarz Latame, Yeshiyesh, Lahem, Tzir, Oshik, Vohem, and Aretz. Meaning, either one. Either it has hinges, which then it can lie down on the ground. That's not a problem. Because again, the hinges are reflective of the fact that it's a door, and you're allowed to close the door on Shabbos and on Yantiv. And if it doesn't have hinges, so then it has to be hanging in air. That's Abaye's understanding of the Braisa. Rava, very similar. Rava Matarz Atami, Kishai Yom Tzir, Oshik Vamin Aretz. Either it once had hinges, because remember, Rava was just a little bit more makel than Abaye. It once had hinges. Once it once had hinges, it's clear that it's a door. And so therefore, you can close it, you can close the opening with it, and it can be hanging on the ground. That's fine, that's not a problem. It can be dragging on the ground. If it never had hinges, so then it has to be suspended in air. So far, so good. Tana Rabbanim, we're in the first wide line on Kuf Aleph. So Suche Kotzim v'Chavim sheitkinu lepirza shebechatz b'zman shekshurim v'tulin olam b'hem b'Shabbos v'insarach lomar b'yontif. If I have basically a door made out of thorns and branches, in other words, it's somewhat primitive, but the basic idea is that it's a doorway. It's a door, and it was meant to close the breach in the wall. So as long as it's tied, as long as it's hanging, so then you could use it. Tani Rabbi Chiya, Delos Amana HaNegros Ein Olam Ba. If I have the widowed door, so then I cannot close it. So the widowed door obviously is a reference to a particular type of door. And so it only begs the question, what does that mean? Eichidami Delos Amana, Ikidami Dechad Shifa. One explanation is that it's just simply a plank. That's all it is. It's just one plank of wood, so then you can't close it. Because again, it goes back to the discussion we had just a moment ago. There's really no evidence whatsoever that this was intended to be a doorway. Basically, it looks like I'm just taking a building block, a material, and stuffing it up in the opening, and that's going to be now a violation of Binyan. Again, not on a Daraisa level, but on a derabbanan level. Igid amri delays le geshama, or maybe it has no crossbeam, meaning that it's maybe not just one plank, maybe it's more than one plank, but all going in the same direction, and it has no crossbeam, and that's why it doesn't look like a door. Either way, the point is that, again, it comes back to the same idea. To close the door on Shabbos, obviously, is okay. It just has to be that the door has to have signs of it being a door. So again, hinges, or according to Rava, at least historically it had hinges, or as we're describing right now, it can't be just simply one simple beam. It has to be composite that makes it look like a door. I'm Rav Yehuda. Okay, now, as long as we're here, what does here mean? We're discussing a CSO LRI, the making of a temporary tent on Shabbos, which we're now basically, we've been saying again and again, it is prohibited. So now the Gemara is going to give us other halachas, which we will see here, we're going to see again in Beitza, and that's the following. Hai Madurta, let's say you want to make a bonfire. Now, obviously on Shabbos, you're not making a bonfire. Okay, you're not allowed to light the fire. On Yontif, you can make a bonfire. Right, you're allowed to light a fire on Shabbos. So I'm making a bonfire on Shabbos. Now, take us back to our Boy Scout days. Remember the good old days where we made a bonfire? Basically, what you had to do is you had to make a tent out of the wood. Okay, am I conjuring up any good memories? So you had to make a tent out of the wood, and then, in other words, allow air to go in underneath, for a little oxygen underneath, and now I have a bonfire. The problem is that on Yom Tov and on Shabbos, you're not allowed to make a tent. Now, again, we all understand, I'm not making a tent, I'm making a bonfire. This is not permanent. Okay, but once again, the Chachamim prohibited even Ohel Arai. So, but what we're about to learn right now is that under certain circumstances, you're allowed to do so. We get this in a number of different contexts in Shabbos. Here happens to be one of them. That even when the rabbis made a gzera, like this case over here, they also built in a loophole so that there's a way to do so. So even though making a bonfire, again, is not binyan min haTorah, it's not, you're not really building, but there's this Isser derabbanan v'asiyas ohel arai, but what the Chachamim did is basically created a loophole in terms of a way in which we could do so. What's the permitted way to do so? I'm Rav Yehuda, Hai Madurta, Mimala Lamata, Shari Mimata Lamala Aser. It's a question of the order of how you make your bonfire. Now, normally, how do you make any type of tent? You start with the walls and then you put the roof over the top. Okay? That's a simple creation of a tent. On Shabbos and on Yom Tov, if you want to make an Ohel Arai, what you could do is you could first make the roof and then put the walls in. Now, obviously, the roof is not going to stand on its own, but the point is that you are going to hold the roof in place where it's going to belong, and then you fill in the mechitzas around the side. So if you're making an Ohel Harai, so then you're allowed to do it in that order, in the reverse order. Right? To my mind, I could just quickly think of another example where, like by Lush, the prohibition on Shabbos of kneading. So kneading on Shabbos is one of the 39 malachas. You're not allowed to take water and flour and make it into a thick mixture. However, if it's not thick, if it's a thin, loose mixture, so under certain circumstances, you're allowed to do that. When are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? When I reverse the order of the way I normally do it. So once again, it's rabbinically prohibited, but a reversing of the order of how I normally do it would be permitted. It's not true all the time, but I've just, you know, in my mind, I can think of a couple of examples where reversing the order of a rabbinic prohibition would be permitted. Here's another example. So v'chein biyasa v'chein kideh v'chein kidra v'chein puria v'chein chavita, and then the Gemara gives about four other examples of where else this is going to come up. Stacking eggs. I have a hard time imagining how do you stack eggs, but anyway. But if you're stacking eggs, so again, you can't stack the eggs first, making the walls and then making the top. That's again fashioning of an ohel, albeit it's midrabanan. So what you do is you start with the top and then you work your way down. Same thing with true with pots. If I'm going to stack pots one on top of another, so I can't make the walls and then the top. I got to make the top and then drop the walls down. Same thing is true with a bed, chen purya. Meaning if I'm making a bed on Shabbos, right? It's a temporary bed. Basically, we're putting it together on Shabbos. There may be issues of if I'm securing the legs really tightly, then there may be a makib patish issue. But if it's just a question of stacking, so again, first the mattress, then the legs. The chen chavit, and the same thing is true with barrels. First the top, and then the side barrels. So again, these are all other examples of, it's oal arai, it's a temporary tent, and the chachamim allowed it if I reverse the order of first roof and then mechitzos. Okay. A conversation between a Sadducee and Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. I feel like if you did a search on this, you'd find him having a lot of conversations with Sadducim. I feel like he's usually the protagonist of these types of conversations. Chidka'ah. So the Tzeduki says to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, you know, you people, meaning he's speaking to the rabbis, and those that are true to the Mesorah, you are thorns, right? On what basis is he allowed to name call like that? D'chziv b'chu, because he quotes the pasuk from Micha. One advantage of the Tzedukim have over me, and it's an exceptional advantage, is they know Tanakh. Okay, I'm not... So in other words, he'll quote a pasuk in Micha, and if it were me, I would just, you know, blank and just blink my eyes. But he knew Tanakh, and he knew Pesukim and Micha. Tovim kechedek. The pasuk in Micha says, the best of you are basically thorns. So that's how Micha speaks to the people. So the Tzeduki says to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, that's what you are. So Amalei Shasha Shafil Sefa Dekra. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya also knew Tanakh. So he knew how to respond. So he says, you fool, why didn't you go down to the end of the pasuk? Dechziv Yishar Mimesuka. We provide protection to the Jewish people like a sukkah. Meaning that we're not just one thorn, but we're a collection of thorns all put together, and we are what provides the protection to the Jewish people. V'alamai tuvim kechedek. And so now go back to the beginning of the pasuk. So what does that mean? You're like chedek, kishem shechadakim, halal meginim ala pirta, kach tovim shebanu, meginim aleinu. And the Gemara says basically in the context now of this discussion, now you go back to the beginning of the pasuk, and you're going to understand the pasuk basically in the same manner. That just like when you have chadakim, like we described in our Mishnah, or actually I should say in the Braisa, but when you have a collection of thorns all matted together, and you can put it in front of the opening of the fence, so basically we're going to close the gap, we're going to be more of a protection. We're a thorn, yes, we're a thorn. We're the thorn to the Rishayim, meaning to the Jewish people in general, we're great for the Jewish people. But to the Rishayim, we become a thorn to the Rishayim. Shenamar, kumi vidoshi batzion ki karnech aishim barzel, uparso saich ishim nechosha, vehadikos amim rabim. Right? And they stab and they pierce amim rabim, many people, meaning to the nations of the world who don't behave. So we are like a thorn in their side. So that's the analogy of Sadikim to thorns. Okay. That ends the first half of today's daf, and that was a discussion of Oel Arai. Basically, it comes out that there is a prohibition, the rabbinic prohibition, that even a makeshift tent you're not allowed to make. And by the way, it's interesting, it certainly seems that when we're talking about a makeshift tent, we're not just talking about a roof, we're talking about the walls as well. And so basically what we learned over the course of the last 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the daf, is that under certain circumstances, you're allowed to do it. When it comes to a door, as long as it's representative of a door, the Gemara says it has to either have hinges, or according to Rava, it had once upon a time had hinges. That's reflective of the fact that it's a door, and it therefore doesn't have to be hanging in the air like our doors over here. And then we talked about, if I want to make a makeshift tent, so I'll start with the top, and then I'll build the walls down, and under such circumstances, it would be permitted on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. We continue with the next mission. By the way, there's more heterim than what's in the Gemara over here. If you want to see some more heterim, I recommend take a look at the last Tosfos on the Amud. We're not going to go through it together right now, but he also speaks about other heterim as well when it comes to the making of a Oel Arai on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Okay, now back to possible gzeiros derabbanan. Okay, one of the first things we learned when we began Shabbos is that you're not allowed to carry from Rishus HaRachin, from Rishus HaYachin to Rishus HaRabim. I think we got that straight by now. Right, we're on the 101st page of Erevin, so I think that's, you know, for us, that's the ABCs. It is the ABCs of carrying, and I think we all know that. Okay. But All that aside, now you go home on Shabbos. Now you want to get into your locked house. So what do you do? So you're going to take the key out of your pocket and you're going to open the door and unlock the door and walk into your house. So during the week, that's perfect. That's a great strategy to get into your house. Problem is on Shabbos. So first of all, you're not going to be carrying the key in the street on Shabbos because it's Rishos HaRabim. So what are you going to do? So you're going to have a lockbox. Okay, like any good realtor, you're going to have a lockbox where the key is going to be locked in the lockbox. Or, like I do, you put the key right under the mat. Okay, you know, everyone know my secret now? So and then you put the key right under the mat, and now everybody gets to hear this. And then you open up, correct. And then you open up the door using key under the mat. Okay, great. And think about it now. In other words, and let's assume, again, let's just create a very sterile environment where, you know, lines are drawn very clearly that where I'm standing outside the house, I'm in a Rosh HaSarabim, and once I walk into a house, it's Rosh HaSayachid, and everything gets so complicated because my street's not really Rosh HaSarabim, and my house is Rosh HaSayachid, but okay, in other words, but let's draw the lines really clearly. Let's create a very conceptual environment so that we understand what the issues are. So what's the issue? In other words, think about it. I have the key under my mat, okay? Take the mat, I'm in the Rosh HaSarabim. Move the mat, that's fine. In other words, as long as I don't move it more than 4 amos. I pick up the key, that's fine. I unlock the door, and I put the key down, it's fine. Meaning, did I violate any Issa D'Oraisa? No. In other words, the Issa D'Oraisa is to transfer from a Rosh HaSarabim to Rosh HaSiachid. If all I'm doing is just simply unlocking the door and putting the key back down again, so the response should be, it's fine. So maybe the concern should be the following. Okay, I'm going to not put the keys back down again, but absentmindedly, I'm going to walk into the house with the key in my hand. Maybe that should be a concern, meaning I'll do that the rest of the week. So maybe the concern is I'll do that on Shabbos as well. And what we're going to learn together in the Mishnah is, this is a machlokus between the Tanayim, whether there is such a rabbinic concern or there is no such rabbinic concern. The lines are going to be drawn where they usually are drawn. Rabbi Meir is going to be more machmir. Right? He tends to be more machmir when it comes to, in general, in halacha, and when it comes to Isuri de Rabbanan, and the Chachamim are not going to be concerned. That's where we're basically going to draw the lines in the Mishnah. Let's see the Mishnah inside. Lo yamod adam b'rishus yachid v'yiftach b'rishus harabim, b'rishus harabim v'yiftach b'rishus hayachid, Ela imkein asa mechitza gavoa asar tfachem divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says you can't do it. You can't stand in the Rosh HaSarabim and unlock the door in the Rosh HaSiachid. Now, you need a real good visual picture of this, but, and I don't have one, and you could look in the book, and the book doesn't have a great picture, but, and the book in general is great, but on this particular instance it doesn't have a good picture. But in other words, basically what you're going to do now is that you're going to slide your hand into the house and unlock it from the inside. And again, you made no transfer. Rabbi Meir says, I'm still worried. Once you have a hand inside the house and once you have a key in your hand, so then what's going to end up happening, says Rabbi Meir, what could happen is absentmindedly you're going to transfer the key from the Rosh HaSiachid to the Rosh HaSarabim. So Rabbi Meir says you can't do it. The only thing Rabbi Meir says you can do is that if you have mechitzos going, extending, in front of your doorway, here there is a good picture, if you would like to see. It's one of the last pictures. We're really at the end. On page 119, picture 357. So in other words, basically, you have, it's not a foyer, but basically you have a wall around the house, around the doorway, in front of the doorway. Walls, I should say, in front of the doorway. So then Rabbi Meir says, and it's fine, because now you're standing in the Rosh HaSiachid, and now you're opening up the door to your house, which is another Rosh HaSiachid. Then it's fine. But otherwise, Rav Meir says it's not fine. Amru lo. They say to him, meaning the Chachamim don't agree with Rabbi Meir. Amru lo maitse b'shuk shel pitamim, shahaya b'yushalayim, shayinu'alim menichim esamavtech b'chalon, shalgabe ha-pesach. So I'm telling you, the rabbi say to Rabbi Meir, that in the butcher or right, the sellers of birds, whatever the case is, they would lock the doors. They would leave the key on the windowsill. Okay, so they also gave away the secrets of where they hid the keys. Sha'al gabe a Pesach. In other words, and they held it right over the door. And it was fine, meaning they had no problem standing in the Rishos HaRabim and opening the doors to their house. Rabbi Yossi Amar Shuk Shal Tzamar Mava, and Rabbi Yossi says, I'd like to make one correction, and that is that they were not sellers of birds, but they were sellers of wool. The Gemara was, and the Mishnah, the Gemara is very careful about getting stories straight, and so Rabbi Yossi, even though it really doesn't change the halachic nature of the discussion, but he feels like you got to get the story right, it was Shuk Shal Tzamar. Okay. Now, so far so good. In other words, basically, in our Mishnah, can I stand in the street and open the and unlock the door to my house by holding the key again? I could do it one of two ways. I can either have the key in the Rishos HaRabim open the door, or just kind of turn my hand in and unlock the door from the inside, but I'm doing no transfer. Okay, in either circumstance. So Rabbi Meir says he can't do it, and the Chachamim say you can do it. Now, the story that the Chachamim told is a story about Yerushalayim. Now, Yerushalayim. What status does Yerushalayim have? So, the Gemara is bothered by this very question. Meaning that you're arguing with Rabbi Meir, that part I get, but you're arguing based on an episode that occurs in the city of Yerushalayim. Doesn't Yerushalayim have walls all the way around it? And, V'Rabbanan Amar, Rabbi Meir, Rishos HaRabim, Mahadrinu Karmelis. Interesting, the Gemara calls Yerushalayim a Karmelis. Now that's interesting. In other words, why is the Gemara referring to Yerushalayim as a Karmelis? I was, at this point in time, when I'm preparing the Gemara, expecting the Gemara to say, Yerushalayim is a Rishos HaYachid, meaning it's got walls all the way around it, and the doors of Yerushalayim are closed at night. Excuse me. The doors of Yerushalayim are closed at night. So, it is a little bit odd that the Gemara refers to Yerushalayim as a Karmelis and not a Rishos HaYachid. Rashi points out over here, and I think this is a solution to the problem. Rashi points out over here that there was no Eruv in Yerushalayim. So, in other words,
the wall itself was on Eruv.
Huh? The walls are just enclosed the area. But Eruv meaning everyone contributing. In other words, there was no. I'm using Eruv in the Eruvin sense. So, okay. Point being, the simple point being, Yerushalayim is not a Rishos HaRabim. Meaning, Reb Meir was talking about where the street went right up to the house. And Reb Meir's concern was, is that if I'm handling a key, I'm going to be transferring the key from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim. And what's the retort of the Chachamim and the Mishnah? Well, here's what we saw in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is not a Rishos HaRabim. At best, or at worst, Yerushalayim is a Karmelis. So in other words, what's the worst case scenario that's going to happen? Is that when I unlock the doors to my house in Yerushalayim, at worst I'm going to be transferring from a Rishos HaYachid to a Karmelis, which is only an Esed Rabbanan. So what exactly is the give and take of our Mishnah between the Chacham and Rav Meir? The Amar, Rav Abba Baruch Hanan, Rav Yochanan, Yerushalayim, Yomalei Dalsav Sanin, Oz Balai L'chayiv, Anolam Mishum Rishos HaRabim. The Gemara quotes that we know Yerushalayim, had it not been for the fact that the doors were locked at night, Yerushalayim would be a Rishos HaRabim. But it's not. It's not a Rishos HaRabim. Its doors are closed at night, and therefore it's a Rishos HaYachid, or, again, Karmelis over here. I know it's a confusing term in this context, but Karmelis over here just simply means that there's a lot of people living in Yerushalayim. It is an enclosed area. It's not a Rishos HaRabim. Anyway, Amar Papa kan kodesh shenifritza pirtzos kan la'achar shenifritza ba pirtzos. So Rav Papa says, look, historically, Yerushalayim once upon a time was Rishos HaYachid. It was enclosed by walls. But what happened is that the walls, I don't exactly know when this happened, but it could be that we're describing over here post the destruction of the temple. Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, but at one point in time, the walls came down. It's not, it was no longer a city enclosed, engulfed by a wall, but it's got a lot of pirtzos, it's got a lot of openings, and therefore Yerushalayim is in fact a Rishos HaRabim. That's the Yerushalayim that's being described in our Mishnah by the Chachamim. Okay, that's one solution. Rava Amar Seifa Asan Lishare Gina Vahachi Kamar. Okay. Now Rav is going to go and address the same issue, but give a very different solution. And that is the following. You see, up until now, we thought that Rav Meir was cautious in a situation where the house is a Rishos HaYachid, and the street running up to the house is a Rishos HaRabim. And the reason why he was cautious, and felt that there was a gzera derabanan, it's for fear that as I'm unlocking the door, by accident, absentmindedly, I'm going to just simply transfer the key from the Rishos HaYachid to the Rishos HaRabim. But up until this point in time, we also thought that what Rav Meir would be lenient is if where I'm standing is not a Rishos HaRabim, but rather it's a Carmelis. Because what's the worst case scenario? I'm going to be transferring from a Rishos HaYachid to a Carmelis. What Ravid now is going to introduce us to is the idea that Rav Meir made a Gzera Derabanan even in a Carmelis. Meaning even if the house abuts a Carmelis, Rav Meir is still going to say, I can't unlock the door. I can't take my hand, bring it into the house, unlock the door, for fear that I'm going to be transferring. Now, yes, it does sound like a Gzera L'Gzera. I'm admitting that. But what Rav is now going to tell us is Rabbi Meir was machmir even in that case as well. Now, how do I explain the gzera l'gzera? Right now, I don't explain the gzera l'gzera. I will tell you this, however. I do know how the Gemara is going to end. The Gemara is going to end by pointing out that even Rav Meir, who is more stringent, is going to end up recanting this position. Meaning, according to Rav, he originally took on this position that even if the house abuts a Carmelis, I can't unlock the door, but eventually Rabbi Meir is going to retract from this position, perhaps for the very reason that it's a gzera l'gzera. Okay, but that's where the Gemara is going to end on this whole discussion. Let's see the Gemara inside. We're on the last two lines of the Amud. Rav Amar Sefas on the Sharigin of Achi Kamar v'chein lo yamod v'rishus yachid v'yiftach b'karmelis. B'karmelis v'yiftach b'rishus yachid. Okay? And you can't even stand in a Carmelis and unlock your door. Elim kenasa mechitza gvar sar tfachim, divrei Rabbi Meir. Again, the position of Rabbi Meir is that unless there are walls extending outside the front door of your house, so that when you're standing in front of your house, you're actually standing in a Rishos HaYachid. Amar lo, ma'isa b'shuk shal patam, ishai b'yushalayim, ishai yun ala menichim, esa maftech, b'chalon shal agabe ha-pesach. And Rabbi Yossi Amar shuk shal tzimayim haya. And now we're just going to conclude the Mishnah. But now we understand the conclusion of the Mishnah. Yeah, but remember in Yerushalayim, now again, Yerushalayim is what? It's not a Rishos HaRabim, meaning, again, we're not, a Rav is not agreeing to the Abaye approach that there appeared. So, no, in other words, Yerushalayim is an enclosed area. It has Carmelis status, and they were fine with it. Meaning either the butchers or the wool sellers, whoever it was, were fine leaving the key on the in the lockbox, standing in the Carmelis of Yerushalayim and unlocking the lock of the house, and they didn't have a problem with it. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Okay, where are we now? Okay, we're going to pause over here. I would like to have gone to the Mishnah. We'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll wrap up this portion of the Gemara. It's basically going to be a continuation of what we've been discussing up until now, until this point in time. As I pointed out, the Gemara is going to end up saying that even Rabbi Meir only made a gzera if the house abuts a Rishos HaRabim, not a Carmelis. Okay, we'll see all that tomorrow. Okay, in the meantime, just a quick recap. Today we finished up the Avos to Rabbi Nasan, the 10 curses of a woman as a result of Chava, of Chet HaRishon. We talked about two topics today. Number one, Asiyas Ohel Arai, the formation of a temporary tent. We talked about closing the doors of a house on Shabbos under limited circumstances that may be a violation of Binyan or Ohel Arai. We talked about making a temporary tent on Shabbos and on Yom Tov, and there's a way which the rabbis allowed it, which would be first the top, then the walls. And then we talked about possibly a gzera of me walking through the Rishos HaRabim home to my house and unlocking a door with a key that was left in the house. So can I do that? Can I not do that? That's the machlokus in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir's machmir, the Chachamim are mekel, and we'll see tomorrow. The conclusion is going to be like the Chachamim, that the accepted halacha is like the Chachamim, which were mekel. Okay, we'll pause over here. Rabbi Chanan ben Akash Amar Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hu Zakus Sofi Chachir Ben Tarmitzah Shenema Necha Feitzamansi Koyel Dutov Yadir.